The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page with the cover story headline, front page of the Triangle Business Journal. Rise of the 15-minute city. Several malls across the Triangle embrace the 15-minute city concept that could affect area downtowns. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Urban Makeover. Several malls across the Triangle embrace the concept of a 15-minute city. And this is written by Kaylee Thompson. Across the nation, Americans have witnessed a slow collapse of once thriving and popular malls and outdoor shopping centers. With the advent of Amazon and online shopping, brick-and-mortar stores have been disappearing, and COVID only accelerated that problem. And now, if retail isn't evolving, it's dying. If you don't make any changes, then I really don't think that you stand a chance, says Katrin Gielens, a professor of marketing at UNC Chapel Hill. You have to adapt and you have to invest in change and come up with a much better mix of what you do with the property and find a better mix of tenants. But some mall owners in the Triangle are taking the matter into their own hands, making their own destiny as they look to turn malls into essentially what the industry calls 15-minute cities. In a small way, it's kind of city building, says Henry Ward, a partner and co-founder of Raleigh developer Loden Development. Our approach to this rezoning is the way that cities have been planned and have grown over time. Quite frankly, it's a much more complex process for projects of this size. Loden, with partner North Pond Partners of Chicago, is redeveloping the South Hills Mall in Cary. Together, they own several properties in Glenwood South, and Loden was selected as the developer for the ambitious remake of Moore Square in downtown Raleigh. The vision for revitalizing malls includes apartments, hotels, office space, grocery stores, neighborhood retail, and even outdoor stages and green spaces for events. And all of that is within walking distance of each other. These redevelopments will cost hundreds of millions of dollars and take years to complete. It's no small feat, and with the exception of Loden, all of the owners are big players in the commercial real estate industry. The Triangle's properties aren't their first rodeo, as many have performed similar redevelopments in other markets and already seeing the fruits of their labor. The hope is that if the property becomes a destination, then people will stay and shop, and if people will live adjacent to all of the shopping and entertainment, they'll frequent the stores and food establishments more often. This has already happened in the Triangle, where Kane Realty imploded the failing North Hills Mall 2 decades ago and turned it into the vibrant shopping and living space it is today. Other such projects are coming. Triangle Business Journal identified 5 properties in the Triangle ready to undergo this ambitious type of redevelopment, anxious for a future where malls thrive again. But that future is a ways off, as these redevelopments will take anywhere from 5 to 15 years to complete. While some, such as University Place, are getting ready to open their first phase, those new uses will still have to endure years of construction and phases while the rest of the property is finished. So is it too late? Will the redevelopment plan save these properties if it's years away? While construction of redevelopment takes longer than greenfield development, the rezoning process often adds even more time, taking up to 2 years just to get through the process with the municipality. Gielen says the key to success is providing the right mix of uses for the area and bringing in apartments and making sure those apartments are built first. She says this is because people want convenience and something that is easy, that people no longer get in their cars and drive to where the stores are. They're either has to be an enticing piece or something unique that draws them there, or housing they can live in that provides walkability. While the road is long and sometimes bumpy, the malls that are adding different types of uses and being smart in their planning are the ones that will survive. Those who don't, won't. In the works, streets at South Point, Durham. Last year, Brookfield Properties, owner of the streets at South Point Mall in Durham, won rezoning approval for the property, paving the way to allow for up to 100,000 additional square feet of retail space and up to 1,382 apartments, 200 hotel rooms, and 300,000 square feet of office space. The streets at South Point, which is has about 1.3 million square feet of retail, is one of the more popular malls in the area, seeing about 11 million visitors annually, according to General Manager Pat Anderson. Brookfield of New York has owned the mall since 1999, acquiring it for just $2.2 million, which has only undergone small changes since then. Shortly after the acquisition, Brookfield added about 16,000 square feet of space for a Crate and Barrel and a 3D movie theater room addition to the theater. Ken Labari, Senior Vice President of Development at Brookfield, says the company started the planning for streets about 8 years ago. The benefit of what we have at the streets at South Point is we don't have a completely inward-facing retail, Labar says. The beauty of the streets at South Point is it extends itself to other things with the kind of the lifestyle retail that we have in place, as well as that entertainment plaza. So it was an obvious thing for us to consider. We also have a lot of underutilized parking, and to us, that always screams opportunity. Before Brookfield can start construction, it must meet the several conditions and requirements that the city of Durham laid out during the rezoning process. Most are off-site improvements like relocating bus stops, pedestrian improvements, and access improvements. While Brookfield won't start construction in 2024, the company is in the planning stages and is getting ready to make announcements regarding the redevelopment later this year. Labar did say that the bigger changes won't start for a couple of years. University Place, Chapel Hill. University Place is the redevelopment of the University Mall in Chapel Hill, and a major transformation is underway. Construction started in September 2022 with the goal of turning the mall into an open-air shopping center with 50,000 square feet of retail and restaurant space, 60,000 square feet of office space, 253 apartments, and up to 150 hotel rooms. The owner behind this massive undertaking is Florida-based Ram Realty Advisors, which acquired the property in late 2018 for $51 million. Jeff Kurtz, Vice President of Development for Ram Realty, says they knew right away that they wanted to revitalize the property as foot traffic had dropped off significantly and most of the retailers were struggling, prompting them to start making these redevelopment plans in 2019. We had this opportunity for residential and hospitality that people would react to really well, that would be a desirable destination. People now want everything at their fingertips and want these environments where they can walk to gyms, walk to grocery stores, walk to retail and entertainment options, and we wanted to try to create that environment at University Place and thought that would be really successful, Kurt says. Ram Realty is getting ready to open the first part of the redevelopment, 900 Willow, a six-story apartment building with 253 units that towers over the mall itself. The building will also have 8 incubator retail spaces on the ground floor. Both the apartments and retail space will be ready for move-in in the fall. The process hasn't come without its challenges, especially since Ram Realty started the rezoning and financing acquiring process right before COVID hit. The rezoning process took 2 years and was complicated, as Kurt says. Chapel Hill's code is set up for greenfield development and not for renovation of a mall structure. One of those challenges has been maintaining foot traffic for the current businesses while performing demolition and new construction. While Ram hasn't disclosed how much the redevelopment will cost, these projects cost significantly more than greenfield development and have to wait longer to see the monetary benefits. One of the key things is good communication with existing tenants. Let them know in advance what work is coming and then trying to let the general public know what entrances are going to be closed off, what the flow of traffic is, what the flow of pedestrians will be, Kurt says. It's been challenging for people coming out to the center to stay up with all of the closings that we had out there. South Hills Mall, Cary. South Hills Mall is Cary's oldest mall, and it is set to transform in a big way. That change includes a large sports complex the town of Cary has wanted for years. Joint owners Raleigh developer Loden Development and Chicago-based North Pond Partners, who have owned it since 2021, applied for a rezoning with a preliminary development plan in early 2023. Loden's Ward says the companies knew right away that they would be bringing changes to the asset, but just weren't sure what or when. The plans show there would be up to 1,775 multifamily units, up to 935,000 square feet of office and public institution space. up to 235,000 square feet of research lab space, up to 550,000 square feet of retail space, up to 350 hotel rooms, and 500,000 square feet of sports and recreational space. The redevelopment would also include a 500,000 square foot sports complex that the town would build and manage. We knew when we bought the asset that the town of Cary was looking for a home for their community center and multi-sport facility, so very quickly we began to have conversations with them about that possibility for South Hills, and it became very clear that it was a meeting of the minds in terms of overall vision for South Hills as a whole and for the type of location that would be appropriate for that facility, Ward says. The developers recently had their public hearing and should have a rezoning decision by the end of the summer. If approved, the companies would start site work right away, with some of the first phases opening by early 2028. The entire redevelopment would take 10 to 15 years. Waverly Place, Cary. While Hines has only owned Waverly Place in Cary since 2022, it already has big plans to revitalize the asset with apartments, office space, more retail, and outdoor community gathering areas. The Houston-based company has submitted a rezoning to allow for up to 725 residential units and up to 30,000 square feet of commercial space. The commercial uses allowed are office, personal services, retail stores, ABC store, theater, neighborhood recreation center, brewery, nightclub, bar, and restaurant. The rezoning is not for all of Waverly Place. It's only for 6.5 acres that includes the Cine Bistro and lots along New Waverly Place and the northeast corner of Colonnades Way. Hines Managing Director Paul Zarian says the rezoning will be going before the Cary Town Council for a public hearing this summer. The company is hoping to start on the development by the end of this year. Hines sees both challenges and benefits to the way Waverly Place was designed. The two-story retail presents issues, while the central green space provides opportunity. Two-story retail in suburban spaces is challenging because you have to direct traffic to spaces that are inherently more difficult to access, Zarian says. The format of Waverly creates some accessibility challenges, and because of that, there are some places that are difficult to lease inside the center. But the fact that it is designed that way is an amazing template for transformation into a mixed-use property. In addition, redevelopments like this mean more money. It costs more to redevelop an existing asset rather than to take an empty lot and develop something new. Zarian says those costs can add up, especially because redevelopment means doing multiple phases, which can take much longer. This can affect the return on investment as units and products get delivered later in the process. That begs the question, why even do this? Why not find a site a mile down the road that's a greenfield site and develop something new? In this context, the ability to deliver a project that is truly integrated means that it can often stand alone and be differentiated from a number of the other projects nearby, he says. As a resident, if you live in a place like Waverly, once it's redeveloped, there's a Whole Foods that's walkable, you're integrated with all the retail, all the events and programming that happens in that green space is immediately accessible. All of those amenities are suddenly at your doorstep. And finally, Park West Village, Morrisville. Park West Village in Morrisville is slightly ahead of the curve for its redevelopment, as it already has three different residential buildings that the owner, Casto of Columbus, Ohio, developed in 2014 and 2016. Casto has owned the property since 2009, making several changes and additions over the years to continue to bring in visitors. It has an improved expansion plan on which work has begun, which includes 115 apartments, a Fifth Third Bank, and a 4,200 square foot commercial building behind the movie theater. Casto also has an approved development plan for the outdoor retail shopping center, but it requested an amendment in November. Shannon Dixon, Executive Vice President of Asset Management, Development and Leasing for Casto, says the amendment and plan revision will go before Morrisville's Town Council this summer. Right now, the amendment would allow for the demolition of B&B Theaters, Bad Daddy's Burgers Bar, and Witch Witch Sandwich Shop. In place, there would be 27,700 square feet of retail space, 21,000 square feet of office space, and 312 multifamily units, including units designated for affordable housing. Bad Daddy's Burger Bar will be part of the future development. Casto cites COVID as the kicker for making the company realize it needed to find new and creative ways to activate the center, particularly because the theater closed during the pandemic. We wanted to add some restaurants and some retail, and our residential out there has been very, very successful and creating a lot of vibrancy within the center, Dixon says. Rejuvenating our entire courtyard area, creating a bigger entertainment space where people can gather, and more pedestrian friendly. You want it to be vibrant. You don't want a vacant theater and a big empty bed bath box, and you have to make those decisions. Maybe you just want to not reinvest in your asset and leave a vacant box, or add a residential component, which would add long-term vibrancy to the center. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll turn to the viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook as it's related. The headline, Will Downtown Suffer Because of 15-Minute Cities? And this is written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journal. In 2020, Paris, host to the 2024 Summer Olympics, embraced the 15-minute city concept, which revolves around a community where individuals can walk or ride to work, shop, dine and play, all within a 15-minute trip. The concept is not new. Historical documents suggest similar concepts as far back as the 19th century. But we are in the 21st century, and the stakes are entirely different. Urban planners are jousting over gridlock solutions, transportation priorities, and the best use of taxpayer money. Reporter Kaylee Thompson's deep dive into the remake of five important retail complexes across the Triangle offers a glimpse of whether many towns are open to this 15-minute concept, which could dramatically reduce the use of our highways and decentralize what today is known as the Central Business District. Thompson's reporting points out that some malls in the Triangle are now considering using mostly retail space for apartments, hotels, offices, grocery stores, event spaces, movie theaters, and, of course, retail and restaurants. The theory behind this 15-minute concept is to restrict individuals' ability to get into a car and embark on their day by driving 15, 30, or 40 miles a day all over town. On paper, the concept seems a cause well worth the effort. But if urban planners are lured by this utopic decentralization dream, one of the biggest casualties will likely be downtowns. In recent years, especially since the pandemic, downtowns nationwide have suffered because of lower foot traffic, remote work options, and struggling small businesses. Only in the past few years have we started seeing the gradual resurgence of downtowns, whether Raleigh, Charlotte, Phoenix, or Austin, Texas. Capital cities such as Raleigh rely on institutions such as the state government and healthcare systems to host their offices and facilities downtown because that's where people work and are physically present for 8 or 9 hours a day, 5 days a week. All of that has changed, and now planners believe that some communities may have become resistant to leaving their homes for anything that takes more than 15 minutes to travel. In building the North Hills complex, Kane Realty can boast of the first 15-minute area in Raleigh. You can live, work, play, dine, and socialize in around a 1-square-mile radius. Now, owners of some of the older malls and open shopping centers plan to do just that. It all starts with offering dwelling units. Numbers show this may not be the best time for the Triangle to build apartments, condos, and even single-family homes. So why this sudden rush to embrace the 15-minute concept? Exactly where can these developers find a lender without putting up 60, 70, or 80% equity? In writing about Paris's transformation, Fast Company wrote, "There are now 746 miles of protected bike lanes, and more Parisians bike than drive. Empty offices have been redeveloped with housing, co-working spaces, gyms, shops, and other uses under one roof. The mayor recently said that 2025 would be the year of hyper-proximity, with even more focus on bringing services to each neighborhood so people don't have to get in the car every time they need to run an errand. 15-minute cities are a worthy discussion, but cities and towns may want to do an impact study on central business districts and the apportionment of taxpayer dollars before zoning and rezoning tracks in search of utopia." And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. New Coral Bay Club on rise. Beachgoers to Atlantic Beach this Memorial Day weekend will see that an oceanfront club that has been a staple of beach life for decades is gone. The Coral Bay Club, a member-owned club that dates to 1958, demolished its longtime home and is building a new facility. The club has 625 members, with many from the Triangle. "We were spending a large amount of money on repairs every year," says Alan Gant, the chairman of Burlington's Glen Raven Company and the chair of the club's building committee. "We just couldn't keep putting band-aids on it." Gant says the repair costs were in the hundreds of thousands of dollars every year, a significant number for a club that reported revenue of $3.64 million for fiscal 2022 and expenses of $3.56 million, according to its Form 990 tax filings. The building was showing its age, with 27 different air conditioning units and two kitchens on different sides of the club. Gant says the club looking at repairing the building, but ended up with a figure that was close to tearing it down. Then we said, well, we've got some fantastic real estate here. What would happen if we were to go up a story so you could look at the sound and the ocean, he says. We've never had that view. The process makes for an unusual summer, with the pool and beach remaining available to members, but with portable bathrooms and temporary kitchens. But in April, the club will debut a two-story, 45,000-square-foot venue with sweeping views that builder Samet says will feature flexible, multi-use spaces, as well as a ballroom, four bars, and more. The cost is significant, with Gant saying it will be well north of $10 million and likely under $20 million. But he says the reception from the members has been positive. If you take a look at the design of it, you'd say, this is in keeping with a beach club, he says. It looks like it belongs there. Charlotte gets strange nod over Raleigh in U.S. News rankings. Here at Biz, we are baffled by the 2024-25 ranking of best places to live in the U.S. put out by U.S. News & World Report. Raleigh dropped a few spots to number 6 this year, while Charlotte climbed from number 8 to number 5. In other words, Charlotte passed Raleigh on the list for the first time since William Christmas laid out the capital city. We get it that Charlotte has upped its cool factor, landing the Atlantic Coast Conference and a downtown baseball stadium. But anyone who sat in traffic on Providence Road on a Monday morning or overpaid to watch the Panthers and Hornets flounder again knows Charlotte has a ways to go before catching Raleigh as a great place to live. Disgruntled investor backs off for the moment. A month-long dispute involving a Raleigh hedge fund and a vaccine developer has reached its conclusion. In April, Shaw Capital began pushing for changes at Novavax, criticizing leadership for the biotech's poor performance. Then Shaw ramped up its efforts, urging stockholders to vote against the reelection of three directors. But Shaw ended its campaign May 20. The firm, one of Novavax's top three largest shareholders, withdrew its stance after Novavax announced a licensing agreement with Sanofi worth more than $1 billion. Shaw, in a letter to other shareholders, acknowledges Novavax had made decent progress with the Sanofi deal. Shaw also took some credit, saying it was unfortunate that it took the firm's campaign to galvanize the board into action. Now you can bet on the Open, but what's the pick? With sports betting now legal in the state, North Carolinians will have an easier time betting on the U.S. Open Golf Championship beginning June 13 at Pinehurst No. 2 than ever before. But guessing a winner could be as hard as hitting a hole-in-one. According to FanDuel Sportsbook, American Scotty Scheffler is the odds-on favorite to win the U.S. Open with plus 450 odds recently. Scheffler, the winner of this year's Masters, found himself at the center of controversy during the PGA Championship in Louisville, Kentucky earlier this month. There, Scheffler was arrested after driving around a fatal car accident on the way to the Valhalla Golf Club. Louisville police say Scheffler ignored officers' instructions and assaulted an officer by refusing to stop his car. Scheffler says the situation was a big misunderstanding. The second favorite is decorated Northern Irish golfer Rory McIlroy with plus 950 odds. Xander Schauffele, the American golfer who won the PGA Championship, is the third favorite with plus 1,000 odds. And finally, Pinehurst Club names new leader. The Country Club of North Carolina has named a new general manager and one with long ties to the state. Jim Sutton returns to North Carolina after serving as general manager at the Country Club of Charleston in South Carolina since 2019. The club hosted the U.S. Open Women's Golf Championship in 2019. Sutton, a native of Wilmington, graduated from UNC Chapel Hill in 1994. Among his previous roles was a stint at the Carolinas Club in Chapel Hill from 2008 to 2012. Jim brings a broad range of skills and a commitment to service that will lead to memorable daily experiences for our members and provide clear direction and leadership for the club staff, CCNC President Charlie Rivers says. And now we turn to the top stories in the Triangle Business Journal, beginning with one written by Kate Tracy. Clouds Brewing charts next steps after closing taproom. After making the decision to close its downtown Raleigh location, a local brewery is tapping into other areas of growth. Last month, Clouds Brewing closed its tap room and restaurant after a decade at 126 Northwest Street, but the brewery recently signed with Empire Distributors of Georgia and plans to at least double its production and taproom footprint within the Triangle next year. We realized we're missing out tremendously on the grocery market and convenience store area, and that's what Empire really brings to the table, co-owner Matt McNeil says. McNeil describes the decision to close the downtown Clouds Brewing as a difficult one, but with sales down 25% from 2019 and a 10-year lease on the location expiring, it was time to move on. The making of Clouds Brewing beers, including its Wolkenbrau Lager, Precipitation Pilsner, Midnight Delight Milk Stout, and more, occurs at 1233 Front Street in a building with approximately 5,000 square feet of space. Every Thursday, Clouds Brewing employees move brewing equipment to make room for tables for guests, and every Sunday, they pack up the tables and move the brewing equipment back out for beer production once again. Using the space for both production and a tap room has not been ideal. It's been really, really hard, McNeil says. Clouds Brewing's lease at the Midtown location is expiring next year, and the business won't be renewing as a mixed-use redevelopment is planned there. McNeil has been reluctant to buy and install more brewing equipment to ramp up production, given that there's such a short time left on the lease anyway. Toward the end of 2023, Clouds Brewing started running double production shifts to keep production rolling 16 to 20 hours per day. We're really struggling to keep up with the demand at this point, McNeil says. Currently, the brewery is looking for a new space that's between 10,000 and 20,000 square feet and located within 30 to 45 minutes of downtown Raleigh, preferably a former or existing brewery space, McNeil says. The new location would include a tap room open 7 days a week. Copa Airlines set to debut at RDU. New RDU flight to Panama sees healthy demand. And this is written by Lauren Onasorge. As Copa Airlines moves closer to its launch at Raleigh-Durham International Airport, it's reporting positive bookings, a good sign for the flight's future in the Triangle. CEO Pedro Heilbron told analysts on an earnings call recently that the numbers bode well for RDU's first nonstop flight to Panama City, Panama. Copa is planning to launch three destinations from its Panama City base next month. In addition to RDU, they include destinations in Brazil and Mexico. I'm glad to comment that early bookings are coming in at healthy levels, Heilbron told analysts. His statements come just weeks after Heilbron came to the Triangle to talk about the RDU opportunity. The flights start June 21 and will run 4 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. But that could be just the start as Copa builds up its fleet. Heilbron told Triangle Business Journal that the plan was to grow our frequencies as the market develops. Copa is one of multiple airlines bringing new nonstop service to the Triangle in the next 2 months. Lufthansa debuts its nonstop flight to Frankfurt on June 6 with five weekly services. Aeromexico is scheduled to come next, operating daily out of Terminal 2 starting July 1, though its rollout could be complicated by the possible cancellation of a partnership with Delta Airlines. As for Copa, Heilbron said on an earnings call that the airline will be growing in the low to mid-teens for a number of years, but he said it controls its own pace and that there could be opportunities to grow faster. We see good opportunities in terms of overall market demand now and new destinations, Heilbron said. That's as inflation continues to be an issue in the U.S. Copa Airlines CFO Jose Montero told analysts it is visible in rising airport fees, handling fees, and hotel rooms for crews, pressuring business in the U.S. even as Latin America has seen less prevalent inflation. We have not had as much pressure as some of the U.S. airlines, he said, noting that the airline's success in cutting costs since the pandemic has also helped minimize the impact. We've done a lot over many, many swim lanes in order for us to be competitive, Montero said. Sale means progress at a huge Durham project, this article written by Kate Tracy. With a recent land sale, new development is progressing at a large project in Durham, following a significant change to its lineup of retail, office, and residential offerings. A 5.4-acre parcel of land at Durham's 751 South development sold for $9.5 million per Durham County Property Records. An LLC associated with Alex Mitchell, president of 751 South, was the seller. The buyer was local real estate investor Catherine Booth Butler, who purchased the property through Land and Car of NC LLC. We were ecstatic to have such a seasoned real estate investor invest in what we're doing. Having her involved in our project was welcomed. I would not be surprised if we don't do future transactions with her, Mitchell says. 751 South, a 165-acre development located at 9310 NC Highway 751, south of Durham, has been in the works for years and has a controversial past. A 2018 deal to have a Lowe's Food as an anchor never came to fruition. Mitchell says the plans for the recently sold parcel include a 330-unit apartment building with 15,000 square feet of retail space on the ground floor. And our next story is written by Lauren Onasorge. Drone owner fights for flights. Apex entrepreneur weighs options after courts side with NC board. Is selling drone maps of geographical information for construction companies a form of protected speech, or is it surveying without a license? It's the crux of a legal case originally filed in North Carolina and decided by a Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals panel on May 20. Entrepreneur Michael Jones of Apex and his company, 360 Virtual Drone Services, wanted to provide customers with aerial maps and 3D digital models, but faced pushback from the North Carolina Board of Examiners for Engineers and Surveyors, which characterized those activities as practicing land surveying without a license in violation of state law. So the company filed a lawsuit arguing that the board's restriction on its ability to offer those services without first going through the rigorous process of obtaining a surveyor's license violated its First Amendment rights. A district court sided against it, and the U.S. Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals followed suit, concluding that the board has not violated plaintiffs' First Amendment rights. Jones says that when the board told him he was breaking law, I could hardly believe it. I didn't think that I was doing anything that could be considered surveying, he says. In fact, I don't know of any surveying company that even uses drones the way I was. I'm looking to keep up the fight and getting justice, not just for myself, but for other drone operators across North Carolina. Sam Gedge, an attorney with Institute for Justice representing 360 Virtual Drone Services, says the plan is to pursue further review either from the full Fourth Circuit or from the U.S. Supreme Court. Today's ruling says that the state can criminalize sharing certain types of photos without a government-issued license, he says, and it does so on the theory that such a law somehow does not regulate speech. That reasoning is badly flawed. Taking photos and providing information to willing clients is speech and is fully protected by the First Amendment. Jones started providing photography and videography services in the state in 2016, founding 360 Virtual Drone Services a year later. Jones had taken an exam to be certified by the Federal Aviation Administration to pilot the drone and initially offered standard photography and videography services for events like weddings. But when he began offering aerial mapping services, advertising that his maps could be used by construction companies, trouble emerged, court documents show. In a December 2018 letter, the State Board of Examiners informed Jones that it was opening an investigation into whether his firm was illegally practicing land surveying. Site near Dix Park gets okay for seven-story development. This article is written by Kaylee Thompson. The area around Dix Park keeps growing up as another property has been approved for taller buildings. The Raleigh City Council on May 21 approved a less than half-acre site for residential mixed use up to seven stories with conditions. The rezoning passed unanimously in its second appearance before the council. The new zoning allows up to 60 residential units and 10,000 square feet each for office and retail space. The former zoning for 716 and 718 South Saunders Street was neighborhood mixed use up to three stories. The parcels were already rezoned in 2022, adding the transit overlay district as the city worked to apply the TOD to areas closest to the bus rapid transit western corridor. The applicant, an LLC addressed to the Raleigh Architecture Company, originally offered two zoning conditions in its application, prohibiting certain uses that are normally allowed in the residential mixed-use district and limiting height to 95 feet. After the first council meeting, the applicant added a condition that required a contribution of $90,000 to the city's affordable housing program. Raleigh Architecture did not respond to request for comment. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, starting with On Tech and Startups, written by Lauren Onasorge. Apple, so far at RTP, really tiny progress. Apple's big splash in 2021 has seen only incremental growth. Years after Apple announced plans for a campus with thousands of workers in Research Triangle Park, the site where it plans to create its East Coast hub is still quiet, even as it hires elsewhere in the region. In April 2021, Apple announced plans for its 3,000-job hub in RTP, but has not released any public updates on the project since. While public records show movement behind the scenes from a design standpoint, construction has yet to start. But it's not because of a regulatory holdup on Wake County's end, officials say. Public records show paperwork for a pair of permits on Little Drive tied to a temporary gravel pad, a staging area for equipment to support future construction, and often the first visible sign that a project has started, has been in for about a year. The permits, however, have not been issued. Wake County insists that's on Apple. We have not received any resubmittal from the applicant. Until such time the applicant resubmits, we cannot conclude our review and issue approval, a county spokeswoman says. And Apple has all the time in the world to file its resubmittal to the county. Tim Maloney, Director of Planning Development and Inspections for Wake County, says he's not aware of any expiration or deadline that would force Apple to act, else start the process over. Without permits in hand, dirt can't move at the site, he says. A stormwater management permit for the gravel pad was finalized last July and has been sitting in the system awaiting a resubmittal. And land use permit application for the same address was filed just over a year ago. Its status listed as on hold, customer action required. Maloney says the permitting timeline typically depends on how responsive the applicant is. It can be a few weeks to several months, he says. But once a permit is issued, the countdown might begin. Building permits, for example, expire if there are no inspections within 6 months, pursuant to state law, and that could mean Apple is waiting until it's absolutely ready to move prior to taking the final steps needed to move forward. Apple has had some approvals from the state, specifically for a pair of erosion and sediment control plans dated last August for 63.5 acres, and last June for an area less than an acre. Turnpike late fees could be on the rise. As Complete 540 moves forward, a bill that would increase late fees for toll road by 50% is advancing on Jones Street. David Roy, Director of Project Financing from the NC Turnpike Authority, explains that it comes down to escalating cost. The bill, which soon heads to the House of Representatives, deals with a processing fee that has been set at $6 since the Triangle Expressway opened in 2011. We've seen significant increases in some of our operational costs, particularly behind labor and mailing, Roy says. He noted there are no immediate plans to raise the fee, but that the agency just wants the ability to do so in the future. The request is simply to help give us the flexibility to address some of those increases in cost, he says. And finally, preschool tied to embattled church closing. As a community church in Knightdale remains in limbo amid a halted merger deal and a bankruptcy petition, its preschool is closing its doors. Faith Baptist Church, embroiled in litigation with parishioners over a planned merger with the Summit, plans to close its preschool. Pastor Jason Little told a bankruptcy court the preschool will close for good after May 24. The closure, which impacts 25 employees, comes as the child care crisis continues, made more complex by the pending expiration of the child care stabilization grants. In March, an NC Child Care Resource and Referral Council survey estimated that if the expiration went forward, 1,500 child care provider programs could close. And now we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Ed page, written by Zach Ezone. Metabolon adds cash, looks for growth. Morrisville Biotech, with 225 employees, secures $60 million. A biotech in Morrisville has secured up to $60 million from an investment firm to support its growth. Metabolon landed a deal with Trinity Capital, which includes an upfront investment of $42.5 million. The investment date of the credit facility was March 28, and it has a maturity date of April 1, 2029, according to Trinity's most recent earnings report. This additional capital will support Metabolon's investments in research and development as it advances its metabolomics platform. Metabolomics refers to the scientific study of small molecules called metabolites. Trinity Capital is based in Phoenix and has provided more than $3 billion in funding across more than 300 investments, according to its website. It has $1.6 billion in assets under management. With its technology, Metabolon, which was founded in the Triangle more than 20 years ago, helps customers, including academic institutions and pharmaceutical companies, answer biological questions by generating data around small molecules and delivering insights from that data. The financing will support Metabolon's plans around global expansion, which includes initiatives aimed at market penetration and strategic partnerships. The financing has also enabled Metabolon to retire early a $35 million debt facility, according to a statement from the company. We are thrilled to have this top-tier investor backing us, enabling us to advance scientific research, drive breakthrough discoveries, and further develop our technology as we bring market-leading metabolomics and bioinformatics solutions to the multi-omics community, Metabolon Chief Financial Officer Jerry Haynes says. This recent credit facility adds to $25 million in equity financing that Metabolon secured in early 2023. That financing, mostly from new investors, followed Metabolon hitting what were then record revenue and margins in 2022. Metabolon has more than 225 employees, mostly in the Triangle. The company is led by CEO Rohan Hasty, who joined in 2017 as chief business officer and was promoted a year later after the company's former CEO and co-founder, John Riles, retired. NC Innovation begins delivering cash for university research. A nonprofit backed by state funding is directing about $5 million to 8 university research projects through a pilot grant program. NC Innovation, which is focused on advancing research at North Carolina universities into commercial opportunities, plans to distribute $5.2 million to researchers at 7 different schools. The projects include technologies aimed at lithium refining, vaccine development, and drinking water purification, among others. The nonprofit's board of directors, chaired by former Truist Financial CEO Kelly King, approved the set of projects during a closed session May 15. The projects are led by researchers at Appalachian State University, East Carolina University, NCANT University, UNC Charlotte, UNC Greensboro, UNC Wilmington, and Western Carolina University. And finally, Duke spinout preparing for clinical trials. A Duke University spinout developing biomaterials to address challenges around reconstructive surgeries is preparing to test its technology in clinical trials. Insoma Bio recently wrapped up a nearly $3 million funding round to support the company's progress into its first clinical trial later this year. CEO Stefan Roberts, who graduated from Duke in 2018 with a doctorate in biomedical engineering, was conducting exploratory lab work at Duke when he came across the technology that would serve as the basis for the company. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Ben Tobin. Driving resort to rise in Moore County. Investors bet $100 million on 400-acre luxury driving park. A North Carolina company is ponying up $100 million to build what it says is the first luxury driving resort in the state. Autoport, which was registered as a business based in Wake Forest in May 2021 and has Christy Malechnik and Michael Morse listed as managing members, announced May 16 that it is going to build a world-class driving resort in northern Moore County and has 400 acres of timberland under contract for it. The company said it will invest over $100 million and create at least 32 full-time jobs and 100 part-time jobs with an average salary of $48,000. The project, called the Uwari Motorsports Park and Resort, will have 155 private car condos ranging in size from 1,400 to 6,500 square feet per Autoport. The resort will be on Leech Road, just a few miles east of the Montgomery County line, in an area previously planned for the Heart of North Carolina Megapark. Our vision is to create a sanctuary for those who share a passion for driving and collecting automobiles, a place to educate drivers of all levels, both our members and the general public, and a community center for all types of events and gatherings, CEO Malechnik says. The private car condos will include a mezzanine, a studio, kitchenette, bath and shower, a viewing terrace, and golf cart storage, among other things. Autoport plans to open car condo model units by the end of 2025, and the driving course, clubhouse, and 80-car condo units by the end of 2026. The company plans to host roughly a dozen public racing events each year, with audience sizes ranging from 5,000 attendees to 10,000 attendees. It's unclear who else is part of Autoport besides the Mlechnik and Morse, if the company is planning future projects, and what the cost will be for car condos. Morse says, "We've spent 3 years developing our business model and selecting a site in North Carolina." Longtime Coca-Cola bottling facility sold. A real estate investor recently paid millions for a bottling facility that has operated for 50 years in Sanford. An LLC tied to New Market Strategies, a Florida real estate investment firm that has been active in the Research Triangle, purchased the property at 1605 and 1611 Hawkins Avenue recently for $3.85 million, according to Lee County deed records. The site includes two buildings, one more than 32,000 square feet and the other 8,600 square feet. The seller is Beacon Partners of Charlotte, which bought it from the Durham Coca-Cola Bottling Company in 2022 for around $3.35 million. In 2017, Durham Coca-Cola acquired Sanford Coca-Cola from the Coca-Cola Company. Roy Warren, founder and managing principal of New Market Strategy, says, "We have a number of properties in North Carolina and particularly in the Raleigh market. We think Sanford's strong growth makes this an attractive investment." And finally, Las Vegas investor buys warehouse. Continuing a trend of out-of-state investors flooding money into eastern North Carolina, a Las Vegas real estate company spent millions recently on a warehouse and additional land in Kinston. 1350 Kinston LLC, a group tied to Revolve CRE of Las Vegas, purchased a 114,000-square-foot warehouse at 1350 Cunningham Road in Kinston for $2.2 million, according to Lenoir County deed records. The warehouse was previously occupied by Horseware, an Irish company that makes products for equestrians. Jim Nucitelli, a representative of Revolve CRE, says Horseware has moved out of the space. And now we turn to our last reporter page on real estate, written by Kaylee Thompson. Milwaukee developer targets surging carry. Wisconsin firm plans second project in NC with 186 apartments. Downtown Cary's explosive growth is what drew a Milwaukee developer to expand into the Triangle. Fiduciary Real Estate Development, or FRED, is planning its first Triangle project and only second in North Carolina on the edge of downtown Cary. The multifamily project named Seasons at Cary will have 186 apartments on East Chatham Street adjacent to Vita Dolce Ice Cream and near Fenton. Tony DeRosa, vice president of development for FRED, says Cary's growth and especially its downtown is what drew the company to the region. The developer just expanded into the southeast, starting in Charlotte with a multifamily project. The Cary project is its second in the southeast. The units will have open concept floor plans, quartz countertops, designer cabinetry, upgraded appliances, walk-in closets, in-unit washer and dryers, and a balcony or patio. Residents will have access to a swimming pool, grilling stations, covered patio, pet spa, multi-purpose game lawn, and clubhouse with the fitness center. DeRosa says FRED is expecting to start construction next spring, with the first residents moving in a year later. The company hasn't worked up an estimated cost of development yet, but it does have access to debt and equity for all its projects. Originally, Opadin Investment Company had a similar multifamily project planned for the same site, filing site plans in summer 2023. However, it appears it pulled those plans as they are no longer on the Town of Cary website. FRED filed its plans in early April. Seasons at Cary will be on 15.5 wooded acres. Overall, 110 Noble Creek Court, 844 East Chatham Street, and four unaddressed parcels on East Chatham Street have a combined assessed value of about $3.8 million. All of the parcels are owned by Southwood Realty Company. Hot Durham-Chapel Hill corridor to get more homes retail. A busy corridor linking Durham and Chapel Hill is adding another new development. White Oak Properties of Raleigh is planning a mixed-use project with townhomes, apartments, and retail space for Southwest Durham near the South Square Shopping off Highway 501. The Shannon at Old Chapel Hill will have 43 townhomes, 17 apartments, and 3,500 square feet of retail space. The area between Durham and Chapel Hill is hot for development. A multifamily project with 107 units, an affordable housing project with 60 units, and a residential community with 1,000 homes are all planned for the growing area between the cities. Project manager Jed Gammon says White Oak will develop the townhome lots and then sell them to Dream Finders Homes, which will list the townhomes for sale. A list price hasn't been determined yet. The three-story townhomes will be 1,683 square feet with two bedrooms, a one-car garage, and a recreation room on the first floor. The 17 apartments would be above the ground floor retail. The apartments will mostly be one-bedroom units for rent, but Gammon says that could change depending on the market. The three-story mixed-use building will most likely be developed by White Oak. Site plans show part of the retail will be in a standalone building. Gammon indicates the developer would like to see a restaurant go there. The developer will make three of the apartments for rent at 60% or less of the area's median income for a total of 30 years, and one of the townhomes for sale at 80% or less of the AMI. Gammon says site work should start in the fall and cost about $5 million. The developer recently acquired a construction loan for the site work. White Oak had the property at 3641 Shannon Road and 3638 Old Chapel Hill Road rezoned in August 2023. The vacant site is partially forested and totals 3.08 acres. It has a combined assessed value of $864,000. And finally, Wendell land flagged for 260 homes is sold. More than 100 acres in eastern Wake County has changed hands as a home builder gets ready to construct hundreds of single-family homes on the site. True Homes USA is planning a 263-home community off Lake Glad Road in Wendell, just east of Eagle Rock Road. An LLC address to True Homes USA sold the 120 acres for about $5.2 million to a land banking firm, Grass Lake Capital. Grass Lake Capital purchased it on behalf of True Homes USA. Having a land bank company own the property provides the home builder with the ability to manage more land, but with less capital and reduces its risk as the land isn't on the company's balance sheet. The vacant land is part of an approved development plan submitted by True Homes USA to the town of Wendell. The plan is for homes to be built in four phases. The minimum lot size is 6,000 square feet. Listing prices for the homes are unclear as True Homes USA declined to provide further information. Its nearest homes are within Flowers Plantation in Johnston County and start in the mid-300,000s. And now we'll read some of the big number sections that are sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal. $18.5 million. That's how much funding clean tech firm Industrial recently announced as venture capitalist turned founder Jason Massey looks for more growth. $662.1 million. That's how much revenue Durham's Fortrea reported in the first quarter. The LabCorp spinout formed in July reported $693.9 million in revenue the previous quarter. And finally, $350,000. That's how much Sanford home builder Harrington Properties of North Carolina LLC paid for three parcels east of downtown Sanford in 2023. The firm is seeking to put 29 townhomes there. And now we'll read the quotable sections that are sprinkled throughout the Triangle Business Journal, starting with Shanika Thomas, chair of the Wake County Board of Commissioners, speaking about AI at a panel in Raleigh, May 16, for North Carolina's 2024 Technology Day. It's just changing the way that we work. Not necessarily the jobs are going to be eliminated. They're going to be changed. I think it's going to help with production, and the scope of people's work is going to change. Allucent CEO Mark Goldberg on the federal government selecting the Carey Contract Research Organization to lead part of a multi-billion dollar project focused on the next generation of COVID-19 vaccines, therapeutics, and enabling technologies. This study is a step forward in addressing the evolving challenges posed by COVID-19 and mitigating their impact on public health. Next is Josh Lewis, president and CEO of the Greenville Eastern North Carolina Alliance. As Greenville landed a $300 million plan by Vietnamese clean energy company Boviet Solar, to bring 800 jobs to the city. Some federal policies and macro-level movements are forcing companies to consider U.S. production, and North Carolina is one of the places you can do it. And finally, Bill Harrell, land acquisitions and development partner for Hopper Communities, on the Charlotte developer spending $5.1 million on 145 acres for 400 homes in Rollsville. Rollsville, it's still Wake County, and there's still available land there. Where other towns in Wake County, like Cary and Mooresville and Apex, land is running out. Northern and eastern Wake is like the last frontier that you can find larger tracts like this. And finally, we'll return to the Viewpoint page to read the guest column by John Hood, who is a John Locke Foundation board member in Raleigh. The headline, Higher Exports Will Boost Economy. While some economic metrics continue to offer good news to North Carolinians, others point in a different direction. Agricultural exports, for example, fell by $17 billion last year and appear to be on track for another decline of $8 billion or so this year. As U.S. Senator Tom Tillis and 21 of his colleagues pointed out in a letter to key Biden administration officials, some fluctuations in export markets are inevitable, but this two-year decline in ag exports sticks out like a sore thumb. They argued it was directly attributable to and exacerbated by an unambitious U.S. trade strategy that is failing to meaningfully expand market access or reduce tariff and non-tariff barriers to trade. For decades, elected leaders of both political parties made it a priority to expand overseas markets for agricultural products and other goods and services. They accomplished this feat through negotiations of actual free trade agreements, removal of technical trade barriers to trade, and holding our trading partners accountable to their commitments, the senators wrote. They urged U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai and U.S. Department of Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack to pursue a similar course today. They're right, of course, but such policies are a hard political sell at the moment. Both Joe Biden and Donald Trump have a history of indulging populist opposition to trade agreements, partly following their lead. An increasing number of Democrats and Republicans in Congress seem less inclined to vote for international agreements that lower barriers to our exports abroad, and also, by happy necessity, lower prices for consumers here at home. Whatever the consequences may be for other sectors of the economy, a continued turn away from free trade will wreak havoc on agriculture, forestry, and related industries that rely heavily on export markets. According to NC State University economist Mike Walden's latest analysis, the production and sale of food, fiber, and forestry products generates more than $100 billion in economic impact, accounting for about 16% of our state's GDP. The sector employs nearly one of every five North Carolina workers. Our largest ag exports include meats, tobacco, soybeans, grains, and fresh vegetables. North Carolina firms constitute America's highest exporters of broilers and tobacco. We rank third in pork exports, seventh in cotton and wood product exports, and ninth in the production of softwood lumber. The livelihoods of many North Carolinians and thus the economic and fiscal health of many communities depend on the expansion of international trade, not its contraction. Are there legitimate concerns about trading sensitive technologies and defense-related products with the Chinese, the Russians, and others who wish harm on America and our allies? Certainly. Tillis and the other senators aren't denying the need to take national security into account when fashioning trade policy. What they're calling for is a default policy of free trade with free people in pretty much anything, along with opening export markets around the world for our products. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.